Welcome to the For Got Tonya Project. On this edition, our students at Cuba High School asked Chris Merritt of the Illinois Institute of Rural Affairs questions about the challenges they experience living in a small town.
For Got Tonya, like a lot of stated proposals, they felt like they were kind of being left out. If you look at a map of Illinois, there are a lot of freeways in Illinois, but For Got Tonya didn't have the freeway they wanted. Well, they couldn't get that freeway built. We're going to create our own little state called For Got Tonya.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Markley. I am a senior at Cuba High School. My hobbies are cheerleading and archery, and I live in Smithfield, Illinois.
Hi, my name is Taylor Lester. I'm a senior at Cuba High School in Cuba, Illinois, and my hobbies are basketball and video games.
On this episode of For Got Tonya Project, we asked Chris Merritt a number of questions about living in rural For Got Tonya. Chris is the director of the Illinois Institute of Rural Affairs, located in Macomb, Illinois. He holds a PhD in planning and geography from the University of Iowa. Chris is originally from Canada, but has been a native of For Got Tonya since 1995. His wife teaches fourth grade at St. Paul's School in Macomb, Illinois. He has a son who studies sociology at the University of Illinois in Champaign, and a daughter who serves in the Food Corps in San Diego. Chris loves to cycle and ski and is passionate about making rural communities better versions of themselves. You can listen to our previous interview with Chris about the challenges of running a business in rural America by checking out our webpage, forgottoniaproject.com. Or searching for us wherever you find podcasts.
How do you feel about the road conditions in Illinois? Our small towns tend to get overlooked on issues with the potholes in the roads. Being a teen driver, I hate getting flat tires every other day.
Well, as an old guy, I hate getting flat tires every other day as well. So I can empathize with this person's questions. It's also interesting across rural Illinois that you do see county by county variation. I think there's different levels of maintenance and investment in road repair. And we also, not only is there day-to-day wear and tear because of cars, trucks, and farm vehicles and so forth, but flooding and other sorts of natural phenomenon also cause deterioration. So that absolutely, road maintenance is something you just have to keep on top of. Unfortunately, road maintenance and repair takes up money. And so if you want to get rid of potholes more rapidly, it probably will take more money. And
if you've been on the roads at all this winter, then you know potholes are everywhere. Transportation officials say the snow, rain, freezing temperatures, and ice have taken a toll on the roads. But as Byron Scott tells us, help is on the way.
And you can't avoid them. Sometimes you have to hit them.
Nancy Groves is talking about potholes.
They're everywhere. There's potholes everywhere. And some of them are very deep.
Now, statewide, we have higher fuel taxes, which do go towards road investments. But our little local, so maybe on a, you know, our state highways and bridges and so forth, some of that money may come back to our small towns. Local county taxes also help. And so here in McDonough County, we've had a lot of chip seal go on in the last 18 months, and we've had a county sales tax, I think, implemented very recently. So that's what it takes, is that if you want roads that are smoother and less likely to give you car problems, then it's going to take money. Now, it turns out there is an alternative, which you may not want to hear about, but it has already been used in a fairly broad way, and that is to unpave. So it's happening across America. Cash-strapped communities are confronted with this challenge. We have a lot of potholes. Do we spend a lot of money on tearing up the pavement and repaving or patching it, or do we just remove all of the pavement and go back to gravel?
Facts are simple but impressive. of the nearly 6.5 million kilometers of highways, roads, and streets in the U.S. About 2 of every 5 are unpaved and carry over 1/5 of all traffic. Because they are essential to the local transportation of people and products, gravel roads need to be maintained in good condition. Their users deserve a safe and reasonably comfortable ride. In reality, though, conditions are not always good, and the ride's not always safe nor comfortable. The reason? Scarcity of road maintenance funds? Yes, in part. But there's always a shortage of public works funds.
And oil and gravel, right? And just, you know, get the grader out and just smooth it down and get some little bit of oil on to keep the dust down. Is that what we're going to do? And that is something that has been done in Nebraska, in Minnesota, in Michigan. And so is that progress, though?
Yeah.
So the trade-off is maybe your taxes don't go up as much.
Yeah.
I don't ever think we lower taxes. Ultimately, maybe we do. I don't know.
Right.
But I think the idea would be then if you don't want to repave and patch your roads, then you can make this somewhat drastic decision to unpave your road.
Wow.
Right. Right. And so again, is that progress though?
Yeah,
it feels a little bit like you're moving backwards, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can't bicycle on it as well. Well, of course, you can get a really great. Bike with, you know, with thick tires or something, but
right.
again, it's to be honest, you know, you can get a flat tire on gravel roads as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And more prone to washout too, right? I mean, a gravel road is not as durable in that way to flooding and that sort of thing. So, a bit of a trade off.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think road maintenance is expensive, so I think this has to.
How do you feel about lowering the amount of young citizens who leave Illinois for college? What is something we can do to help increase enrollment at WIU?
So, full disclosure, I am a university employee. I would say the state needs to provide better support for higher education. And I would point to the first issue I would raise is that peak funding for higher education occurred in this state in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to guess that some of your students weren't born then.
No, just barely,
right? And it's been downhill since then. And of course, when the state cuts its funding for higher education, there's a lot of fixed costs. So if state support drops, then family support will increase. In other words, the student or the student's family will have to pick up and increase their expenditures as the state expenditures decline. So what I would say is that we need to advocate across the state. If we want Illinois students to stay in Illinois, we have to advocate for higher state support for public higher education. Well, higher education in general, because there are grants, students, MAP grants, you know, it doesn't matter where you go. It can be a public university, it can be a private university. As long as they stay here, I think that's the thing for our future, I think is the main point.
The state budget crisis has affected students not only on our campus, but at every state institution. Chicago State University is threatening to close its doors come March, and Eastern Illinois University has said that they're soon to follow suit. Other universities in the state will have to make drastic cuts or fear the same outcome in the 2016-2017 academic year. Higher education is not something to be neglected. Rather, it is something to be supported and encouraged. Unfortunately, right now, it appears that most of our legislators and our governor are seemingly indifferent to the plight that students face.
And then the other point I would make is that we need to treat students like we treat businesses. We've spent a lot of time talking about business development, and I think we make a mistake when we don't treat students in the same way we treat businesses. And here's what I mean. The state of Illinois has for years spent millions of dollars going out of the state trying to recruit businesses to come back to Illinois. We spend millions of dollars advertising and giving tax breaks to keep Illinois businesses here, to keep them from leaving or recruiting other businesses to come into Illinois. And I think we should be thinking along the same lines as we think about our students. We should be figuring out, how do we incentivize our students to stay here? How do we recruit students from neighboring states? This is what the this is what the state is doing for businesses. Why aren't we doing this for students? Because the students are our future business owners.
Over generations, Illinoisans have benefited from our state's higher education system. For many like myself, a college education has enabled us to realize the American dream. Indeed, it has been the linchpin to economic opportunity. Along with allowing individuals to realize their full potential, it has brought prosperity to our state, spurring employers to locate here because of our educated workforce and access to our college graduates. And with over 150 locations across the state, our colleges and universities are also major employers, driving economic activity in many regions across Illinois. Put simply, Illinois' higher education system is one of the state's most important assets.
These are the best and the brightest. These are going to be our doctors, our lawyers, our teachers, our high-quality workforce. These are our elected officials. We want the best and the brightest in our state. Why aren't we doing everything we can to keep these people here? So I would say we should do everything we can to reduce tuition or to expand MAP grant accessibility. We need a statewide advertising campaign. When we had the state budget impasse for 2 years, there was a lot of negative press about the state of higher education and that was the state undermining higher education in the state. I think the state should try to fix what it broke. In other words, they should have a statewide advertising campaign saying, and I'm not saying we promote Western or Eastern or U of I, I'm saying just promote higher education in that the state of Illinois has great higher education, and the Illinois Board of Higher Education should be in charge of that.
Higher education is part of the approximately 10% of the state's budget that isn't being funded. Our institutions are not receiving their normal state appropriations, causing them to reduce services, consider layoffs, and even some shut their doors. As importantly, 125,000 students across the state of Illinois aren't receiving their MAP grants. These are the poorest students in the state, the ones who most need our help and can least afford to forego financial aid.
And again, more robust grant and affordable loan programs and need lower tuition costs. So that's, it's not, boy, I'd like to use the phrase, it's not rocket science. But it's not, right? Make it more affordable. We have a good product. It turns out we actually have a really good product. University of Illinois is better than every other Big Ten university in bordering states, right? Yeah. And it's better than University of Missouri. It's better than University of Kentucky. And if you want to go to a regional university, our regional universities are better than the regional universities in all the neighboring states. The problem is that the families that are already cash strapped, they have to figure out, you know, if you don't want to buy the Lexus, even though it is a Lexus, you're going to buy the Ford Escort, right? You're going to buy the lower, even though it, because it's going to get you point A to point B, even if it's not going to do it as well, you're still, that's what you can afford, that's what you're going to go for. So that's my maybe bad analogies driven explanation for why we need to have more affordable higher education in the state.
Like traveling along in an open car without a windshield? Boy, you wouldn't go very far before you got all splattered with mud, and you'd have to keep your eyes closed so as not to be blinded by the dust. Well, when you're traveling along in life, Rangers, common sense acts as a pretty important windshield. It lets you see where you're going, and at the same time, it keeps you from getting splattered by the mud of prejudice. Now, suppose you've made pals with some fella. Maybe he goes to a church that's different from yours, or his folks come from a different country, or his skin is of a different color. Will these differences get in your way? Of course not. Heck, you know what he's like inside. You know he's fun to be with, he likes the same games and goes to the same hobbies, and sticks up for you like a real pal. Well, that's how your common sense acts as a windshield, Rangers. As long as you use it, no one can throw dust in your eyes. Now let's get back to our story.
How do you think we can improve on getting rid of racism in small towns throughout Illinois?
So, it is a really good question, and I have to tell you that, you know, I ride my bicycle a lot, and in my various routes, I know of at least two Confederate flags in this part of the state. Yeah. And I am curious to know why a person would put a Confederate flag on their house. I don't know if it's ignorance or if it's racism. And either way, it suggests that that we who are sensitive to this issue have a role to play. If it's ignorance, then we have to make the point that the Confederate flag is not just some, you know, beautiful loser imagery. It's an embodiment of racism. It's, you know, I like to say the Confederate flag is racist, traitor, losers. It's a trifecta of badness. Mm-hmm. And why would you promote that? So I would say call out racism when you see it. Call out folks for flying the Confederate flag, for example, if it's in Havana, just as an example. And I happen to know, I believe there's a store very close to the McDonald's there that does periodically have a flag. And I'm not sure why. That, to me, does a disservice. Mm-hmm. To the community.
You don't have a problem with him personally.
No.
You just don't have it.
Like, I don't know him personally to have a problem with him personally.
Right, but the flag does offend you, but you don't have a problem
yeah,
with
yeah,
him.
Yeah. I mean, I ain't going to lie to you. The flags do offend me,
the flags
but
offend.
I don't have no problem with this man. That's his right to put up whatever he want to put up on his own property.
Thank you, buddy. You got it right.
But they offend me. Yeah. I ain't going to lie to you. Say it don't.
You were saying that you felt one of the good things that has happened is that the flag has come down. And in my research and looking at the flag, I found that it was really never a national flag. That's right. It was never intended to be a national flag. And yet we've seen it evolve into something that is almost evil in some eyesights. Because what it is, it has become a symbol of oppression, particularly for African Americans in this country. We know that for something to oppress you, it invokes a fear or an authority. It's burdensome to you. And that is what the flag, the Confederate flag, has become. It has been burdensome in that it tries to extort a person. And when I say it extorts a person, anytime you are dealing with extortion, you're dealing with something gotten by a deceitful method. And what is that thing that has gotten through the flag? It's fear.
And then the other thing I would suggest is how do we get rid of racism is that we might want to talk about the way that racism hurts community and economic development. And what I've included here in my document is very interesting. In fact, I include a couple of very interesting articles from the New York Times that were done very shortly after the 2010 census, and the stories were looking at the rural Great Plains, so rural Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and of course, like downstate Illinois, rural counties out there have seen decades of population decline, except for a few exceptions. And so the New York Times wanted to say, well, what is going on out there? And it turns out that those communities that had turned their demographic decline around were those that had been welcoming to immigrants, immigrants from Mexico and Central America. These towns had main streets that had more vibrancy, fewer empty storefronts. The first time in decades, school enrollment was going up, property taxes were going up. All the signs of successful local economic development were there because people were welcoming to immigrants. And so we can talk about racism, you know, in terms of that it's an immoral belief system. You can choose the way you want to go at it, but I would say that if you're uncomfortable calling out somebody because you think it's morally wrong, it's good economics to not be racist. You'll for one thing, you have a better soccer team, but you'll also have a more vibrant downtown. you'll have more people to share the tax burden, you know, so your water rates, you'll have more people paying property taxes. I mean, that's a fixed infrastructure, whether you've got 1,000 people or 2,000 people, right? And if you can increase the number of people using that, you can sort of lower your per unit, or your per household cost. So these are all good reasons, whether it's a moral issue for why racism is bad, but you can also make this very secular, hardcore business decision about why welcoming other people in is a really good idea and not be racist. So.
All right, so thanks for listening to our interview once again with Chris Merritt of the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs. If you'd like to reach out to Chris with any questions that you might have, visit the webpage www.iira.org. You can email him at cd-merritt, that's M-E-R-R-E-T-T, at wiu.edu. And even call his office line, it's 309-298-2281. If you have any questions or comments about this interview or anything else you'd like to check us out, visit our webpage, forgottoniaproject.com. And finally, before we go, I asked Liz and Taylor to close us out with some post-reflection thoughts they had on this interview. So enjoy.
As someone who lives on a gravel road, I know it's very difficult to keep the roads maintained due to when it rains, you get washboards or even worse potholes than there already was. This is an issue, I believe, that goes a little bit farther than just taking it back to old gravel and oil, though I'm not for sure what we could do. I know another issue that we have in our small town is the fact that there is nothing to do for the teenagers. You have to drive up to 30 minutes just to go see a movie, or if you would like to go bowling or anything of that nature.
As a student planning on going to WIU next year, I've had a lot of people tell me that maybe WIU isn't the best option, or maybe that I shouldn't go there because enrollment's going down and it's going downhill. And even though it's a great school, I feel like people are putting it down. This issue could be hurting enrollment too.
Before Gatonia, like a lot of stated proposals, they felt like they were kind of being left out. If you look at a map of Illinois, there are a lot of freeways in Illinois, but Fort Gatonia didn't have the freeway they wanted. Well, they couldn't get that freeway built. We're going to create our own little state called Fort Gatonia.